Stay tuned for an edition of House Call recorded earlier this month with guest host Shayla Litza as she speaks with Sean Parmenant of ISU's Student Health Clinic on the topic of emotional wellness.
Good morning, KISU-FM listeners. This is your host, Shayla Litza. Thank you for tuning into our Halloween edition of House Call today, where we'll be chatting with Sean Parmenant about Emotional Wellness Month. Thank you for joining me, Sean. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be able to talk about this important topic with you.
So before we really dive into Emotional Wellness Month, let's talk about who you are, what you do, and what you're bringing to the table today.
Sure. I work for ISU. I'm the clinical director for the Pocatello Counseling Clinic. It's a small counseling clinic where students in the counseling department who are doing their practicum, internship, that sort of thing, are able to see clients from the community and do counseling services, provide counseling services. What we're really excited about is that oftentimes we can provide services for less than people's insurance copay. So $5, $10, $15 sessions, depending on if it's couple, individual. But we also are able to waive some of that too. We want people to come in, so we're not huge sticklers on that either. So it's exciting, I think, for people to get a trained perspective on counseling. And the way it works is our master students see clients, they get supervision from doctoral students, and then I oversee sort of the whole operation and helping clients get in the door and making sure that best practices are kept. And so it's kind of a cool setup that I think is pretty unique and obviously cost effective for people who need counseling services.
So your counseling services at the clinic are not just for students?
No, we see the community too. So students are welcome, but we see anyone who needs some counseling services. Couples, families, individuals, anyone.
Okay, so Emotional Wellness Month. Let's just dive right into the topic.
Broadly speaking, we're going to talk a little bit today about just what wellness means, maybe the different components of it for people. And we're all unique, so maybe we have different components of our wellness. But there's certain components of wellness from a counseling perspective that we see as integral for overall health. So I want to talk about those and then maybe some barriers that people run into when it comes to their overall wellness and health. And then just some things that we can try starting today to get a little bit of help if you're feeling like you're not in a space where you want to be wellness-wise, and that should cover it today.
There's obviously different sides to wellness, different parts that you mentioned earlier, components in particular. What are some of those components?
Ideally, in a perfect world, these are balanced. These components are balanced. But the way we approach it is there's social wellness, which means, you know, obviously we're connected to people beyond ourselves. And I think sometimes when we're not in a space where we're maybe as well as we want to be, those are times where we're not as connected to relationships, to friendships, to family relationships. So that loneliness that can come with that and distancing obviously is a barrier to our overall wellness. And that looks like it doesn't have to be this huge monumental thing to become more well in that area. Maybe it's reconnecting with one of those relationships, doing a lunch when you think you don't have time. Maybe if you've met someone that you thought, I could see us being friends, but that's sort of where it ended. Mm-hmm. Then maybe it's a follow-up phone call or text to set something like that up. That's an example of social wellness. There's also occupational. And I think that's a little bit trickier of a component of wellness, but I mean, ideally in a perfect world, we're working in an environment that is fulfilling, that we feel like we matter. And I think that's really important too, to feel like we matter to someone beyond ourselves. Mm-hmm. So occupational wellness is that. It's like I'm making a difference in one way or another. And you know, not all jobs provide that in the same sort of way, but I think even feeling like we're fairly compensated at our occupation or having a job that maybe we don't always love the day-to-day, but there's opportunity for self-care, there's opportunities and discussions about wellness where people aren't overtaxed and overburdened and piled upon. All those things I think are really important components of occupational wellness that we all perhaps don't have day to day. And maybe that's an advocacy effort on our part. Another really important component is spiritual wellness. And that, you know, that's really unique to each of us. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes to being connected beyond ourselves. So I think a lot of really smart people we have this natural curiosity to know where we're from and what's the purpose of us being here. And I think tapping into ways of making meaning of that is really important. So for some, that looks like maybe it is more religious services in that sort of dogmatic way of worship. It can look like a hike through nature. It can look like meditation or just being alone with our thoughts. But oftentimes I see this as one of those things that goes by the wayside when people are really, really busy, not taking the time to connect beyond ourselves. So that's one really important component too. The next one that I want to talk about is physical. And I think it's really important because a lot of people, I think when they're considering physical wellness, it's just about exercise. And of course that is really important and we want those things, but also has to do with nutrition. It has to do with proper sleep regimens, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But those three components are really the ones that need to be attended to. And what you find often when we're taking care of ourselves in those ways, we often have sufficient energy to get through our days, sufficient stamina and that sort of thing. And what you'll find is when people are really struggling in this way, they might turn to substances or other things like smoking or energy drinks, whatever the case may be, to sort of supplement what probably would come naturally if we were fully taking care of ourselves in those ways. And again, I think because of culture and busyness and that sort of thing, this is one of the components that is often not attended to because we're busy and takes time to do those sorts of things. One I like to talk about too, and I don't think it's one people think a lot about, is just our intellectual wellness. And so that looks like challenging ourselves intellectually. And again, there's broad variation here, but I think for me, it's are we challenging ourselves to think in new ways? Are we challenging ourselves to have to problem solve? So maybe day-to-day in work provides that in some ways, but this can look like doing a challenging puzzle, learning a new language, learning a musical instrument, reading a book where we're really thinking about things in a new way. Those are really important because not only are they maybe in activities that people enjoy, but it also helps us with memory and helps with concentration. It helps us just our mind be more attuned to what we're doing day to day, which increases productivity and helps us be more mindful. The last one is our emotional wellness, which I think can often be a challenge. And I am a clinical director now, but I also work as a clinician. And this is one thing that I see people really struggle with. And so one thing that I'm attending to as a clinician is, are the emotions that people are experiencing, do they match the stressors in their lives, right? So sometimes you see maybe more minor things lead to really emotional outbursts and consequences. And, that's obviously not ideally what we want. We want those sort of things to match. And so when we're emotionally well, I think we just have more of an understanding of what we're experiencing in the moment. And that has a lot to do with mindfulness, which we'll talk more about. And then in addition to that, you know, I think one of the components that I found to be most important with the people I work with is just how resilient they are, how well they bounce back. So if we're really emotionally well, we can handle the stressors in the day to day and even bigger things, traumatic things, more challenging things that come our way, and process through those and still be well, even though it may be painful and hard and still experience emotions. But we can still attend to our wellness through those times in an effort to be more okay and present and that sort of thing. So those are the main components. I sort of flew through those.
No, that's great. I didn't realize there were so many components, but now that you mention them, I can think of all of those parts of my life where they need work. Let's say you do have a client that's coming in and they're struggling financially. You know, maybe they've had some bad relationships, or they just broke up with someone or just got divorced. And then on top of it, you know, one of their kids just moved out and they're not getting enough sleep because all of these things are running through their head. How do you balance that as a clinician when they come in and try to get some help with their emotional well-being? And how do you go forward with that?
Yeah, you gave a great rundown of like the type of clients that we see. I mean, most often when people are coming in for counseling, there's a variety of things that are present for them that are causing them difficulty. And he asked a really great question of, well, how do we kind of sift through that? And for me, it has somewhat to do with theory, right? Each counselor that you see will have a theory in terms of how they approach the presenting problem for a client. But I think from a wellness perspective, there's different assessments we can do. Like, for example, there's a wellness wheel where you're identifying the most important aspects of your wellness, and then you're sort of on a scale identifying, okay, how well am I doing in each area? So maybe it's a 7 in everything, except there's this one component, physical wellness, that's like a 2. And so then you have an idea of, okay, maybe that's where I need to put some effort and some time into, which is perfectly okay. And one thing that I encourage clients to do as well is we can borrow from other components. So if you're doing really, really great socially, I wonder if there's time to pull some of that back. Maybe we don't need to go out every single night, and maybe there's more opportunities to put some alone time into your spirituality and kind of figuring out that way. Then there's sort of a perspective like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs that, you know, sometimes if people have 7 things that they come in and say, I need to work on 7 things. I'm a big believer in momentum with the clients that I work with. So let's get the one that we can handle that maybe isn't like the grandest of change. It's just one where we can get started today, maybe find some momentum. And then as you build upon that, you have more energy to tackle the next thing that maybe is a little bit bigger. And you're sort of, then you tackle that and it feels like you can kind of work your way up to the things that might be bigger or more emotional or more emotionally taxing for you. But again, that varies somewhat from counselor to counselor, but that's how I approach it, is I want people to feel that momentum. Because oftentimes by the time people come to counseling, they're not in a place where they're feeling very, very positive momentum behind them.
Well, and I think if I were a client, that I would want that positive feeling.
And sort of on the flip side is sometimes that doesn't occur. And so that's fine too. And I think recalibrating what are our goals, you know, what do we want to do together is perfectly fine. So maybe there's like, I thought this was where I wanted to start. I want to start with my physical wellness, but then I just realized I'm so depressed about the breakup that I had that I just can't get in that space. I need to process through this breakup first. Well, let's do that. This is flexible. We can tackle anything that a client brings in. So having, I guess, that rapport and ability to be flexible with clients, and the clients having the ability to be vocal in that way, is really important too.
Before we get to the barriers of wellness, we are going to take a quick break and be back with Sean Parmenond in a few moments. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning. I've got Sean Parmenond in the studio today to talk about Emotional Wellness Month. So before the break, we talked a little bit about the components of wellness, and some of those included social, occupational, emotional, maybe intellectual. Understanding the barriers to wellness is what we're going to start talking about. I know personally for me, one of the barriers to wellness is time, not feeling like there's enough time to make all of this happen. It doesn't ever seem like there's enough time.
Yeah, right. And I think not only does it not feel like there's enough time, I think at least my perception is we have to maximize every moment of our time. I just have this perspective, and sometimes I fall into the trap of I may like bust some stuff out for 7 out of the 8 hours of my workday, but then in that 8th hour, maybe it wasn't as efficient as it needed to be. And then I feel bad about it afterwards. So it's this approach of one, there's not enough time because we're busy. And I think that's partially cultural. I just feel like human beings are busier than they used to be. Everyone seems in a rush. And to some degree that we are in a rush because I think there's just more on our plate currently than there used to be. And I think there's a tendency for some to say yes, right? I think it's really difficult for some people to set boundaries. So I know I fall into that trap too, is when we want to be successful, we want to maximize our time. Maybe some of us have a tendency to have some people-pleasing type tendencies. We're going to say yes and take on more and more and more. And sometimes you find yourself completely buried, and then it's almost like, I don't know what to do, right? Then sort of the wheels fall off of us, you know, metaphorically, and it's really hard to dig ourselves out of. So it's the busyness. It's saying yes when maybe we should be saying no. And then I think, you know, culturally, and again, this is just anecdotal. This is my experience in my own life and then working with clients. I don't think people handle stress or emotions quite in the same way that maybe we used to, or perhaps that we should. And so I see a lot of people who maybe have a perspective that they shouldn't feel, right? Whether it's up, whether it's down, whether that everyone should just be even killed. And that if they're having moments when they're feeling acute stress or acute sadness or loneliness, that there's something deficient there, which I think is really difficult to have that perspective, because emotions are innate and biologically driven. They're need-based. So mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm feeling lonely, that's a really great sign that I need some companionship. Or if I'm feeling sad, maybe I need some cathartic release. They're really key indicators that something's amiss within. And to ignore those things, I think, can become really, really challenging. So, I going back to stress, I think we're stressed because of our busyness. And then I think a lot of people are stressed because they're stressed. And I think having some opportunity to be okay with some of the things that we feel is really important. And I think it's important just to consider all of emotions, particularly stress, just on a continuum, where stress, positive stress, like eustress, is wonderful because it's a great motivator. So if I have a big test coming up, maybe that stress propels me to study a little bit more and tuned in a little bit more to what I'm reading. Those are all great things. But then on the other end of that continuum, some people feel so stressed that they're opening that textbook to study for a test and they can't make sense of the words, and then they go to take the test and their mind goes blank. So it's sort of understanding where on the continuum you fall, and then sort of having a plan for it, you know, before you're experiencing the stress. I think once you're overburdened and overtaxed, it's so much more difficult to get out of that than it would be if you already had some ideas of, here are my triggers, here's what stresses me out, and this is what I know works for me when it comes to wellness. I think sometimes, too, people fall into a trap of having, you know, more of a future focus. Like, I'll get well when I'll attend to this Monday. I'll start my diet Monday. I'm talking about my own life. I think that's perfectly okay, except I've gone a lot of Mondays, right? And I think that's tricky when we're just saying, I'm going to do this when, because that when is really, it changes. It's a moving target. And you can go a long time. You can go 10 years thinking about, you know, a part of your wellness that you need to attend to and not doing so. And I think oftentimes then that leads to some feelings of guilt, and that sort of can put you down this pit of even shame, which is really hard to climb out of again. So that's why when you're recognizing that change needs to take place, I'm a big component of, like, tackle that, even if it's messy and imperfect and it didn't go exactly how you wanted to. Once you have that forward movement, I think it's easier to keep moving forward.
So let me just ask you, as far as stress goes, obviously there's a lot of components of stress. You know, there's a lot of different reasons why we're stressed out. What are some of the things that you would tell someone, you know, if someone's listening right now and maybe it has to do with studying, or maybe it is the diet, or maybe, like, what would you tell someone to do to help with dealing with the stress?
Sure.
To make things feel a little bit better?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'm going to do with any client I work with is I want to understand what their goals are from a counseling experience. And the reason that you ask that is, one, it helps us sort of plot a course of where you'd like to go with the client, but I really want to know if the goals they have for themselves are even attainable, right? So it goes back to, like, goal setting 101.
Oh, yeah.
Is the goal you're setting, is it achievable? Is it measurable? All those things that we sort of learn throughout our lives. Because oftentimes I find when it comes to wellness is there's some really high goals out there in terms of how people want to look and how they want to behave. And that's great. And some people do really well with those really high goals. I find when I set really high goals, I get in a perpetual pattern of not meeting them. And I think when you get into that funk of, I have a goal, I haven't met it. Here's a new goal, I haven't met it. That has cognitive, that's really difficult cognitively and emotionally to set yourself up for failure. So that's part of that momentum thing I was talking about is, so if I have someone that's really stressed out, well, let's make sure that you're not sort of causing this stress, right? Because I think, again, stress is naturally related to living, but I think sometimes we pile on by unfair expectations, unfair sort of thoughts of who we need to be, and sort of not a very fair way of approaching our own lives and our own growth. So that's where I would start to answer your question. It's just kind of figuring out, maybe part of the stress is pretty easily controllable by just having reasonable expectations for ourselves.
You mentioned earlier when we were talking about, you know, some of the barriers to being well, and something came into my head at that point, and it was it being okay that we didn't meet that goal.
Like, if we see people we care about struggling, for the most part, we look at them and say, gosh, they're going through a lot. How can I help? Compassion really is about suffering with. I mean, you're getting into their shoes and feeling like, I can sense their struggle, and naturally we want to do something for them to help. We don't practice a lot of self-compassion for ourselves, right? So if we have 99 things on our 100 things on our list, and we did 99 today at work, sometimes that one thing almost negates that 99. There's not a lot of, you worked really, really hard today. You got so much done. You kind of rocked your requirements for the day. We don't do a lot of that. We don't practice a lot of that, where even just saying, gosh, I failed at this. That's okay. We fail at a lot of things in life. People just aren't great at accepting that or having that sort of self-talk for themselves. So that's one thing in counseling we're doing too, is really examining sort of the self-talk and habitual ways that we talk to ourselves that we likely would never talk to someone else like that. Mm-hmm. If they were making the same choices we make, we probably extend some compassion and thoughtfulness and care. We don't often do that to ourselves very well.
So while we're talking about the components of wellness and some of the things that we can do to, you know, make our lives a little bit better, mindfulness is something that you mentioned, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, mindfulness connects to me a lot with that self-compassion that we discussed. Mindfulness is about just being aware how we're feeling. And that sounds so simplistic, but I mean, if you're like me, I can have a meal and I couldn't tell you how it tasted, or I can drive home from work and I couldn't tell you what I saw, or it just doesn't, we're not necessarily in that moment. And what can happen is sometimes when we're so focused on the past, that's often a sign of depression. When we're really focused on the future, that's usually anxiety. But really the only time we can make changes or do something different is in those given moments. So mindfulness is just being aware. And sometimes, again, that's if you're feeling sad, is giving some time to feel sad and being okay that I feel sad this occurred, or maybe it's part of my day today. I feel sad today. I don't know if you've ever had like a really good cry, right? Like you just...
Oh, yes.
You've heard of that?
Yes.
So sometimes, you know, none of the circumstances around you may have changed, but just that cathartic release of giving that emotions the stage and letting it have its time, you end up feeling better afterward. And so mindfulness is about just being in that moment. So one thing we'll have clients do, for example, mindfulness can be about engaging your five senses. And that can be a great way to stay grounded and stay present. So we'll do like with clients, what's called a mindfulness walk, where they're walking outside, maybe feeling the wind on their face, smelling whatever smells are coming this way, pine trees, touching the bark on a tree as they walk by. As much as you can engage those five senses, the better. And, you know, not to go down too much of path here, but technology and phones makes that really difficult. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I may be working and I'm so distracted with my phone, and then emails open and that's chiming at me, and I'm a tenth of as productive as I could be in that amount of time just because I'm so distracted. So mindfulness is about maybe we shut that down. We actually have a meal where we're looking out the window and admiring nature and just being present and tasting our food, which seems so crazy that we have to give attention to that, but sometimes we do. And I think as we are more mindful, one, we're just more aware of what our needs are. And that goes back to that overall wellness perspective. I just sometimes have a head down perspective, and I think a lot of people do, of got tasks, got to get them done. Day to day is sort of task oriented. And we just go about our days like that. And I think to me, mindfulness is coming up for air from that and just being more attuned to what we're feeling and what we're experiencing emotionally.
I never realized how much I wasn't paying attention until I got a ride to Boise, where I wasn't physically driving the vehicle myself, mm-hmm. and looking out the window at everything. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, there's houses right here on the side of the interstate. And I had no idea, but I've driven that direction hundreds of times, and I just never even noticed that there were houses right there on the side of the interstate.
To me, it's scary to think of how that manifests in our relationships. So if we're not fully present to like what we're eating, to make an assumption that we don't do the same things with people we care about, I think we do. And, you know, research would tell you that I think on average, a parent spends 7 minutes with their kids each day with technology off, with just one-on-one conversation, which...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's scary to think about.
Very scary.
And that's not even partner relationships. I think, you know, I work with a lot of couples. I think almost that relationship's the first that's neglected, because we sort of have this assumption, like my significant other, because we're committed to each other in a certain way, that they'll be there, that they're the ones that I can take energy away from and allocate elsewhere, because we have this commitment together, whatever that looks like. That's a really scary way to approach relationships, where you just have this assumption that they'll always be there and that you don't have to give time to them. That leads to a lot of people in my office.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
What I like about wellness is you can get started today. You can get started right now. So, for example, if sleep in that part of wellness is a challenge for you, I mean, some things that are recommended is a consistent bedtime. And one thing that, you know, is really important too is to let your bedroom be the place where you sleep, and then everything else is out of your bedroom, right? So it's not a place to watch TV or be on your phone or wherever. It's your place to sleep. And sometimes, you know, cognitively when you go to bed, often people are making tasks in their head and thinking of all the things that need to be done, and they're on their phone and returning texts. That's not a great way to quiet your mind and fall right asleep. So if you can have a nightly routine that looks like hopefully plugging in your phone outside of your room and having that space is just your time to maybe center, maybe it's a space to read, to meditate or attend a spiritual, whatever that looks like, it doesn't really matter, as long as you have a routine. So that once you're in that routine, it's sort of a message and signal to your body that it's time to slow down. And as much as you can sleep at the same, fall asleep at the same time, wake up at the same time. I know that's difficult for me, but that's really important too. And we all know the impact of sleep, right? I mean, it's energy, it's being able to tackle things. One thing that I found is just this human tendency of, well, there's these different components of wellness. We tend to give up the thing that would probably be the most helpful for us because we say we don't have time. So for me, it's like, I don't have time to exercise. Well, no, really what it is it's not very fun for me to do that, right? But I know if I did, I absolutely have no doubt I'd feel better and feel more well. But it's like, do I want to wake up at 5 a.m. to do that because I'm so busy? No, right now sleep's more important. And I think sometimes people don't recognize that's kind of what change is about. It's about whatever I'm going through right now might suck, but the things that I would have to do to change might be even harder and even worse than the situation that I'm in. So I have clients all the time that are like, we spend time and we've identified this is the thing, this is it, this is what I need to change. But they may not be willing to do the work that it would take to actually make the change to provide them relief. So then it's sort of this accepting what the here and now is and just kind of embracing whatever is going on for them. But change is really hard. I mean, that's one element, I guess, that I'm trying to make a point here when it comes to overall wellness, is sometimes change is really, really difficult for people. And that's why people have a tendency to stay the same sometimes. And I didn't talk a lot about stagnation, but I almost see that as one of, we were talking about intellectual wellness. I think that's one of the most difficult places for someone to be, is just stagnant, not forward moving, not challenging ourselves, just sort of being stuck in that rut. I think that can be really emotionally damaging.
I'm sure that there's someone listening right now that, you know, maybe needed a wake-up call, or maybe needed some encouragement, or maybe needed some advice, and is going through something. How do they contact you?
Typically, what we find with the clients that we see at the Pocatello Counseling Clinic is people wait a really long time. They sort of dig themselves into a place that's really hard to dig themselves out of. And one thing that at the Pocatello Counseling Clinic we're trying to push is, let's get you in. If we're going to use like a car metaphor, let's just get you in for an oil change. Let's just get you in to talk about maybe that pressing stressor that you have, talk through, have that cathartic release, and having someone to really hear and understand you, and use that as momentum to tackle whatever is in front of you. Versus some of the things we see where relationships are in really sort of the point of no return sometimes, just really difficult places. And so if anyone out there is struggling or just wanting to talk about something, they can absolutely call us at the Pocatello Counseling Clinic. Our number is 208-240-1609. You can also text that number I sent out to you.
So, and
get a text back. Or if you just want to send a text, we'll call you. And we're fine to take that responsibility. We also have, if you look us up on Facebook, Pocatello Counseling Clinic page, please like us and share. And then also you can send a message for an appointment that way too. Either way works great. We have 4 clinicians just waiting and hoping and wanting to work with you. So they're pretty eager as students to embrace the opportunity to counsel people. So I think that's really exciting as well, is they have that spirit of excitement of wanting to work with people too, which is cool.
Well, Sean, I really appreciate you coming to do this edition of House Call with us today. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
You've been listening to House Call, recorded earlier this month with guest host Shayla Litza speaking with Sean Parmenant about Emotional Wellness Month. Next week, Thursday at 8:30 a.m., join Leif Tapanella and Peter Pruitt for The Nature of Idaho and a program all about fly fishing here on KISU Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Coming up is On Point at 9 o'clock.